What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex, and we've got a bonus episode for you here with two great creators. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Baker and Nicole Gu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh my gosh, I am very excited to talk about this book. I love this book. It is called Pumpkin Heads. It's coming out April 7th from Top Shelf, and it is about, I'm going to give the stupidest possible description, and then we'll get a little more into it, but it is about a band trying to figure things out, playing gigs. They wear pumpkin heads, per the name, and they're a punk band. I think everybody is listening. You get it. You get the joke. But it is very much a slice of life comedy that plays around with the members of the band in different iterations throughout the course of the book. It takes them from one place on an emotional journey to another place by the end. But before we even get there, before we even get into that, you two have been working together in varying capacities. You've done your own things, but you've been working together for a very long time now. I'm sure you get this all the time, but how has the working relationship developed? What has changed over the years leading up to Pumpkin Heads?
Well, it's been a long journey, I'll say that. But, you know, when we first started working together, you know, I had been an illustrator and I had read a ton of comics when I was a kid. I was very into manga and I had a dream when I was in like middle school of moving to Japan and becoming a manga, but I didn't really end up making them so much myself. And so when Dave and I first started hanging out, I wasn't as well versed in the making of comics. And, you know, he had been doing it since he was little. And we started out with some really small things, an 8-page comic for his book, his webcomic Action Hospital. And then we made some mini comics together. And I would say it was a little bit more half and half divided, where Dave would write a thing and then I would go and draw a thing. Our first little mini comic was, I did write some of them and we discussed a lot about it. But as we've gone on, the collaboration has just gotten more and more sort of interwoven of the process, where, you know, for Pumpkin Heads, the kind of spark of the idea came from me. And then we had lots and lots of discussions about who these characters were and what we wanted out of them. And I think the script went through maybe 4 rounds of edits between us. So that is something that maybe wouldn't have happened 10 years ago when we were doing, you know, the first Fuck Off Squad issues. It was like, oh, we have this idea. You're going to go write a thing and then I'm going to go draw a thing and we'll talk about it. And each book has gotten progressively more and more collaborative as we've gone.
Yeah, I think also a component of that is just we know each other so fucking well at this point that it's kind of like, I know, like my book, Mary Tyler Moorhawk, I'm not gonna pitch that to Nicole because I know she doesn't want to draw that.
No, I do not.
Like, there's stuff that I would want to draw, but I'm not good enough to draw. So then I go to Nicole and I'm like, hey, so I got this idea. What do you think? And then she goes, oh, you know, there's something there. And then she'll think about it for a day or so, come back and be like, I liked this part of it. What if we took it in that direction? And then it's funny because like the germ stage, like the kind of germination, like building block stage is very both of us. And then I kind of go away and do my thing and then come back and we talk about it and do things. And then she goes away and does her thing in terms of the drawing and comes back and we talk about it and whatever. And so it still is kind of divided, but also not really at all. It's all like one big weird. We go to a park by Nicole's house in between rounds of scripts rewrites. We go to a park by Nicole's house and we play catch for like 2 hours, where it's just us like throwing a baseball back and forth and her being like, I just don't get why you like this character. Like, this character needs to go. And I'm like, no, that's my favorite character. Don't do it.
This is definitely top of mind because getting slightly into the concept of the book, it kicks off. It's a lot about collaboration, right? It's about artistic development. It's about collaboration. Mm-hmm. And we're here talking about collaboration. Both of you, like we're saying, has gone off and done your own things between your collaborations. How do you think that's affected them? I imagine it makes it better and stronger because you're going off and exploring something on your own before you come back together, but you tell me.
I mean, I think from my perspective, it's a different muscle set, right? And that's my favorite thing about making books, is either whether I'm drawing for myself or finding other artists to work with, it's that collaborative process and learning how somebody else's brain works. Like, I did a book with Alexis Zierit, and he doesn't care about character development. He doesn't care about, world building. You know what that guy cares about? Drawing dudes in, like, flak vests and with robot arms murdering each other. And so I know that. So now it's like an interesting Rubik's Cube for me of, like, okay, yes, we want to deliver what people want from an Alexis Zierit comic, but how do you build in character development and world building and a theme that is saying something more than just, like, look at these cool machine guns? And I think the book we made together, Night Hunters, is one of the best things he's made, because it serviced him and gave, you know, and that's not to say his other books don't. His other books are great too. I'm just saying, like, that was my kind of, like, how do I reverse engineer the best Alexis Zierit book possible? And that's kind of what I'm always doing for Nicole. Like, when I'm writing for her, like, I remember one time we were talking with somebody, and they were asking me, because they weren't a comics person, which happens sometimes, you know, Nicole and I are out and about and somebody's talking with one of us, and it's about, like, so I hear you guys make comics like Archie, and you have to be like, ugh, no, but yeah, thank you. But they were talking to me almost kind of like, it must be hard to let go of your story and have somebody else take it and own it, which is the exact opposite of what a good comic book writer should be doing. You should be, it's almost kind of like being a screenwriter for an actor, like, or a writer director for an actor, like Christopher McQuarrie with Tom Cruise. All those movies, they're in service of the idea of Tom Cruise. Whether or not you like that is a different story. But, like, that's what their whole goal is, to be like, isn't it cool that Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise? And they engineer set pieces to make sure that Tom Cruise is likable, it's shining, is a weird flame that our cultural moth brains go towards. And, like, that's kind of what I think of when Nicole and I make books, is like, how do I make a scene or a set piece or something for Nicole's ability and strengths to shine? And how do I experiment with that and move it around? And also, like, oh, and this is kind of a weakness for Nicole. I wonder what we could do to, like, improve that or build that up or something.
Well, let's talk about the content of the book a little bit. So, like I was saying, it's about collaborations, but it's not about comic book collaborations. It's about musical collaborations. It's about this band, this Pumpkinheads. The singer storms out of the house. We find out kind of why later on in the book, that I won't necessarily spoil if people pick it up. But we do have a new lead singer for the band in Hannah Lipsky, who signs up. And that's what kind of kicks off the plot. And then we go off in a bunch of different directions with all the different characters. We follow them. But on the base level, why music? Why this band? Why was this the story that needed to be told?
I mean, I think that, you know, I don't think it's subtle that music is, you know, kind of replacement for just active creation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are many, many different types of art. And we wanted to talk about creative collaboration and, you know, kind of creative identity as well. It's very much about identifying yourself as one thing and then having that be questioned by the way that your life progresses. And, you know, I think we both have been in music at certain points in our life, are interested in music. And the kind of, you know, Dave and I talk a lot about how when we are on tour for a book, when we're doing shows, et cetera, it's like we're in a band. You know, mm-hmm. We go on tour, we go to all these shows, we pack up all our bags and our gear, and we hit the road. And I think there are a lot of similarities between being a comics team and being a band. And so it was a pretty easy one-to-one of, like, hey, this is a thing I want to talk about. Let's find something that's not just me navel-gazing comics, which is still really kind of is, let's be real. But, you know, Hannah, our main character, Hannah, is in multiple different forms of art. She starts out as a painter. She's in art school. And so it really is less about music or less about painting or less about comics than it is about the act of creation and identity and collaboration.
I thought it was very interesting, speaking of Hannah, that we do have this inciting incident of the singer they currently have leaving, but all of these characters are kind of midstream as we pick up with them. Like you're saying, Hannah already is a painter and she just kind of swerves a little bit to end up with this band and keeps coming back to it. Same with everybody else. We're dropped in the middle of this house they all live in. And I don't say this dismissively, like, as a reader, there's a lot of catch up you have to do. Like, oh, who is this guy? How do they know each other? And it feels like I missed a graphic novel there before I got into it. And it's such an interesting way to tackle it, to throw people into the middle there. What was the inspiration behind that part?
I mean, I think part of that is just like one of the things we were trying to do with Pumpkinheads is replicate the feeling of being in a scene. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm originally from Arizona and I was involved in the punk and horror punk scene there. There's a thriving music scene here in Los Angeles, but also there's a thriving comic scene and a zine scene. I used to host a zine podcast, you know, the highly lucrative zine podcasting.
You've been
world.
Living off of that for years.
Years. Mm-hmm. And it's even funnier to have the podcast be called It's Pronounced Zine, but have it be spelled Z-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were just batting 1,000 on that one. But through that podcast and, you know, the kind of early stages of Nicole and I's collaboration, we fell into this very thriving independent artists community here in Los Angeles where, you know, everybody's young, they're poor, they're trying to get drunk on weekends and pay rent. And that's kind of about it. And we were trying to find a way to replicate the highs and the fucking lows of that scene in our book and kind of discuss that juncture of kind of like, it's not quite young adulthood, you know, but you're like technically an adult, but also are you? And you're like trying to sort out life and you're making mistakes and sleeping with people you probably shouldn't and becoming friends with people that will eventually like hopefully spurn you onto a new kind of trajectory in your life. You don't know that at the time, but like that kind of weird bubbling ecosystem of like a bunch of people with nascent creativity that are all trying to do something and they all are kind of failing equally.
I get made fun of a lot in our comic book club Discord for using the word structure, but I am going to use it here because I think it was a very interesting structure you hit for here where it's a graphic novel, but each chapter feels like its own distinct comic book. Maybe this comes from the zine thing you're talking about, but you start with this great page. That was then, this is now, six panels under each of them. Then you have a splash that almost feels like Sunday funnies, and then you get into the bulk of the story. That's a lot of things to throw out there right at the top of every single chapter. What led to those elements in particular?
I mean, it was a combination of kind of two things that I think that we were seeing in, I'm going to say culture because it's two different industries really, of one of in comics, in serialized comic issues, there has been a trend of, even though we're putting out these single monthly issues, the books are written for trade. They're not written to stand alone. And it was kind of a nostalgic wish for that standalone story to have something concise and understandable in one single issue. And then that combined with, you know, Dave and I are really big Star Trek fans, and there's a trend in TV, but specifically our conversation kind of revolved around the new era of Star Trek versus the old, of we're going to tell these, you know, 8 to 10 episode stories that are one big story and not episodic. And there is really something about living in a world for 22 episodes where not every moment matters. And we live in these little bites of an hour of a story and it is succinct. And maybe there's a big arc over the whole thing, but you get everything that you need in that hour. And so the combination of I don't love the word nostalgia. Actually, I kind of hate it because it's, you know, so much of our culture is based around nostalgia right now. But that type of storytelling, I think, really inspired us to look back and do this sort of Sunday funny romance comic thing and do a little synopsis of here. This is what's going on. This is what you need to know for this issue of this story. Even though we ended up putting the book out in a graphic novel format, we still wanted to replicate that idea of you're going to get everything you need in this 16 to 30 pages because mm-hmm. it fluctuates.
I think there is something to be said specifically about what Nicole hit on with like the romance comics thing, and that Pumpkinheads is a romance comic. Like, it's about like a will they, won't they with the bassist and the lead singer of a horror punk band who live together and make art together. And maybe that's too much intimacy for their relationships, and their past traumas kind of subsume the relationship, and then will they, won't they kind of escape that. Right. But it's also a romance comic about making things. It's about like falling in love with the idea of just being someone who creates, whatever that means. And so because of that, we were both talking a lot about young romance, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane's girlfriend, or Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. And so the kind of opening splash page that's like a mini trailer for the comic is just directly from those like 50s and 60s romance comics. And that was then This Is Now structure was basically a previously on TV episode thing, right? It's the Star Trek, you know, Captain's Log. And I think we didn't even have that in the first draft of the script. I think at the first draft, Hannah just says that was then, this is now, to Jerry at a really pivotal point in the third act. And I was like, oh, you know what? To make that beat really pay off, the whole book should have this that was then, this is now structure, so that when you get there, it's this big moment that like metatextually ties together the past and the present for the whole piece.
Yeah. And one of the things that I love about it, I hope this isn't necessarily spoiling too much, but it's not even necessarily things that you see in the rest of the quote unquote issue. It's just like you're saying, it's plot, emotional, whatever things you need to know to understand what's about to happen next. And I just thought that was a really cool choice. I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, like, perfect example is like one of the characters, Morgan, they love, like, in all the comics Nicole and I make, there's a fake kind of phantom, the shadow Doc Savage character called the Lurker. And there's a issue where they go to the grave of the guy who co-created the Lurker. And like in the That Was Then sections, it's just like him being given the Lurker comics, or them being given Lurker comics for their birthdays when they're like 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. Which definitely is not based on real occurrences where Nicole and I went to Hollywood Forever Cemetery to go visit Joe Shuster's birthday or Joe Shuster's grave for my birthday. It's not at all based on that.
Okay. Totally unrelated.
Definitely not.
No.
I also, kind of the half splashes, I think I was reading, Fantastic Four, like the very beginning of Fantastic Four. And there's this really interesting thing about how the kind of front page of each 8-page story or whatever has this drawing that is a synopsis for the story that may or may not even happen in the actual story that you end up reading. And it's more this idea of like, this is the feeling that you're going to get from this story and not the literal events that are happening in this story. And that was something we really were interested in, because it's this weird anachronistic thing of like, you're showing us a thing to get us hooked into this story, and it may not even be the actual events of the story we're about to read. And there's an interesting tension there that I think I was just really fascinated by, and we were talking about a lot,
especially with those early Kirby and Lee Fantastic Fours before mm-hmm. they like figure it out. Like, I don't think people remember that Fantastic Four was one of the first comics that wasn't just 8-page mini comics bound together, right? But they still were. They're a 24-page story with 3 8-page mini comics that all flow in. So you're getting like 3 episodes of the Fantastic Four per mm-hmm. issue. And so each like splash page that is supposed to be like conventionally, like you can see they're trying to break the mold, and like whoever, you know, the publisher of Marvel or whatever, was like, guys, you can't do 24 pages of one story. That's crazy. And they're like, I guess we'll do 3 8-page stories, and we just won't tell you that it's one story. It's it's really fascinating to read.
Yeah. There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9 to 5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
By the way, of all the influences you mentioned, it's funny to me that, Dave, earlier you were a little dismissive of that story about Archie comics, because that was one of the first things that I kind of sparked to reading this. Like, it's not a one-to-one, and it might just be the fact that Jerry is wearing a hat like Jughead a lot of the time, but like...
That's so true.
There's a bit of a sense of Archie in this book, I think.
Yeah.
I think in the idea that Archie is slice of life romance comics, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, as opposed to, you know, we still have people who, you know, again, outside the industry, when they find out that we make comics, what superheroes have you created? And it's like, comics are so much more than that. But particularly to kind of an outside perspective of, like, people still, to this day, think comics equals superheroes in the States. And Archie is not that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it is so much closer to what we're doing than Captain America, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned Morgan earlier, and I believe they're the character who is constantly checking in on social media strategy, which mm-hmm. was hands down the most stressful part of the book for me to read. And I'm curious how much of that comes from you having to come up with social media strategy for comics, because all of that stuff, all of those things are like, oh, you got to post 4 times a day. You got to post 16 times a day, 32, never stop posting. I was like, mm-hmm. I could feel the sweat coming down my head when I was reading that.
I will say you're pretty good about that, man. I see you on TikTok all the time being like, hey, check out this Conan collection, or like, Marvel's doing a thing. Like I'm impressed by the amount of,
thank you.
If nothing else, just showing up, dude. It's so, like, I feel like we both go through phases with it where it's like, okay, I'm getting back. Shooting higher. That was me doing a Rocky run, the podcast. I don't know. But like, you know, yeah, all of that is directly because it's Nicole and I were talking about this last night of like, there is a sense of privilege from a certain type of artist who doesn't want to post on social media. And you know what? I don't want to post on social media, but if I don't, no one is aware the thing exists. It doesn't sell. And I am not able to make the next thing. And I don't like being a part of this giant, you know, ecosystem that is scraping our data and going to malevolently reshape the world, and already has. And yet, show me a better system. Like, there is no other option.
I think particularly in the last like 5 years, where all of the kind of like tried and true social media platforms have kind of crumbled, everyone is like, I know I need to be posting, but none of this does anything, and I don't know where to go, and there is no outlet to really reach people, and it's very difficult, you know. I probably, even more than Dave, would love to never have to post on social media again in my life, but how, if you want people to know about your work, you have to put it out there in some way, and right now, this is the way we have, and so you have to figure out what is the best way, how much effort do I need to put into this versus actually making the thing and the art and the thing I care about. I know so many artists who are just like, this is not what I signed up for. I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to talk to humans. I don't want to be a social media manager. I want to sit in my corner and draw. Like, you know, and it's really, really a hard line to balance when you realize that you can't, you know, unless you're already famous, you can't have someone else just do it for you, or you can't not participate in it.
Well, just to throw it out there, this is getting far afield from the book, but I'll just throw out my thought on social media since Dave mentioned posting on TikTok. Like, first of all, a lot of that is I approach it as like, well, I'm doing stuff anyway. Like, I do this comic book news podcast. I have three parts. I might as well throw some graphics on there if I'm talking about it anyway and schedule it out for like 2 weeks from now and forget about it. And then it goes up, goes up. But like the thing that drives me crazy that you really get at to bring it back to your book in your book is the idea of like, here's how you crack the algorithm. Like here, you have to do this. Otherwise it won't work. Because I do think the way that it works is the way that it works for you. Like whatever you as a person, as a creator are comfortable with putting out there, that's what you should be doing. And if it's nothing, figure out with like the bare minimum of, hey, I'm excited about my book and I want to tell people about it. So I'm going to put that up there at the end and that's it. But if there is a voice that you have or an idea or something that you want to put out there, it's less about, at least this is what I respond to, right? Like it's less about putting things out there as I got to get something out there every single day or four times a day versus, oh, this person that I like put up something funny or interesting or some cool art. Great, period. You know, and that's what you follow. But I don't know. That was
no.
That was
and honestly, like both of us have seen innumerable returns. Like we both have steady followings of people on the internet, largely based off of work we've done previously, but like, you know, that's part of the thing, right? Is like life happens in seasons and there are seasons where you're really taking it seriously. And there are seasons where you're like, fuck me, I can't do this. And like, you know, there was a good probably 6 months to a year there where I was selling, when they first introduced the TikTok shop, I was selling Halloween Boy on TikTok shop. And it was, man, I was moving units. I was going to the post office.
Interesting. Selling it at the grocery store. Okay.
Yeah,
the grocery store. Getting back to the Archie comics, the digest around the supermarket.
100%. Yeah. No, but I was going to the post office like every day, every 2 days with like a backpack to two bags filled with books. And like that doesn't happen if you don't start posting, you know? Like because some random video of just me being like, this is my book, it's called Halloween Boy, got like, you know, whatever, 100,000 views, 200,000 views, and now all these people are ordering the book. And then that rising tide lifts all, you know, ships, or in this case, gratuitous self-promotion posts on the hell site that is TikTok.
To get back to the book and some of the contents of the book, this is something that I've asked a kabillion times over the years on our podcast as well, but I'm always interested because it's always kind of a different answer. You have a book about music, and one of the only things comics doesn't do is audio. So I know from reading the book how you handle it, and I thought it was an interesting, unique solution. But how did you approach it, and how did you talk about tackling that part?
I mean, when I think about music, and I think about, you know, the elements of music, whether that's rhythm or beats or, you know, loudness. And I think that while obviously comics don't have audio, those are things that comics does pretty well, right? Like you can have panels represent beats or represent pattern, or, you know, it's quite easy actually to represent something being loud by the shapes that you use and the way that you draw things. And, you know, sometimes it's more of a metaphorical, like I'm trying to replicate it in terms of some sort of pacing. And sometimes it's just, look at these kids screaming to mics. There's a lot of that in the book. And, you know, I do think it's tricky. In fact, I have, I teach at Cal State Long Beach, and there is a grad student who's doing a comic based around music. I think they're doing breakdancing, which is super fun. But I've been talking about this exact thing a lot because translating something audio into a very static medium that exists on paper or possibly a screen, you know, it's not the easiest thing. But there are definitely ways to go about it.
Yeah. I mean, we've also been making comics that feature music for a hot minute. And there are like specific formalist picadillos that I think we're both interested in terms of like emphasizing the difference between like quiet, somber moments with very sparse paneling and like emotional overload represented by a ton of little tiny panels. And I think that plays into exactly what Nicole is talking about, where like you might not be able to literally represent the experience of hearing something, but you can represent how it feels to hear something.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the central relationship of the book, and I hope you don't mind, but are you prepared for people to read into your relationship in the relationship between Hannah and Jerry?
I mean, I would be flattered if they thought we were that fucked up, because that would make me we were way more interesting than we are. I think the characters definitely are modeled on our personalities for sure. But I don't think we're actually that similar in ways. Like, I think there's big ideas, and then there's me, the writer, being like, oh, that's a little fissure in my personality. How can I mine that to the worst possible version of myself in order to stoke drama in a story? And like, how can I play up Nicole's aspect of this in order to like diametrically oppose that and really like apply pressure to both of the characters. So if anything, it's more like a voodoo doll, a narrative voodoo doll for our continued sojourn into the creative realms.
I mean, look, every book that you make, whether the characters have anything to do with you or not, they're going to have parts of you in them. And that doesn't mean that the story has anything really to do with your actual, you know, but like that gets infused in there, whether you intended to or not. So, you know, is there stuff about Hannah that's me? Absolutely. Is there stuff about Jerry that's Dave? Absolutely. Is there stuff about Hannah that's Dave? Absolutely. Like, you know, it's just, there's so much back and forth. And I think every character, including Morgan and Brody and Vicky, like they all are us, yeah. You know? So it's not a one-to-one.
If anything, I think that's the most simultaneously like rewarding and vulnerable part of making something with Nicole for as long as I have. It's one thing when she comes up with an idea. It's another thing when I have to execute it and build in the girding of the metaphorical representations of me or people in my life or people in her life or her. And to know, like, you know, you ask the question, what do you think people will react when they modeled on your relationship? That doesn't bother me. But what is more vulnerable is knowing that Nicole knows all of the metaphors that I'm drawing in those books. You know what I mean?
There's a thing that happens when I read a script that Dave has written, and that is I know how his brain works, and I know all of the references he's making, like every tiny personal little reference. And so I read these scripts, and I get a little bit sad that other people are not going to have the same experience with it that I'm having, because unfortunately for all of y'all, I'm getting so much more out of these scripts than you are. it's just like a slew of personal, you know, inside jokes and references. And I think you can feel that when you're reading it as an outsider, but it's never going to be the same as like actually knowing what those references are.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Nicole and I, do we make comics for people to read? Yeah, technically. But it's mostly just like us making comics for each other. Like, this script is me writing like the best portfolio piece possible. Like, if this is Nicole's audition reel for Juilliard, like a monologue that's going to show every bit of color and texture that she can bring to something as a performer and an artist, that's the goal, is to like create a vacuum that showcases how amazing she is, and also tell lies in public, because that's my favorite thing. That's why I like writing, is it's like, you don't know what I'm doing, reader.
off of this, last question that I'm going to ask you guys is, there are a lot of interesting recipes in the book, or at least we get to see a bunch of interesting food, breakfast pizza, lasagna pie, sushi tacos. There's definitely some that I'm forgetting. Are we going to get a complimentary Pumpkin Heads recipe book along with this?
Dude, that's a great idea. Okay. That's a great idea.
I just want to eat all those things. That's why I asked. Do you have the recipes? Do you know what's in them? Or,
I mean, in my head.
All right, well, let me ask about breakfast pizza. But that's a good idea for a zine. That, breakfast pizza was the main one that I was like, I know there's an egg on it. It seems like there's bacon. Well, yeah. What are we talking about? Is there like sauce and cheese or how are you making it?
I mean, it would maybe be a bechamel, if anything. Mm-hmm. But mostly cheese. It's like a, you know, a breakfast burrito, but on a pizza. Like, okay. You know, give me some hash browns. Give me some, you know, either crumbled sausage or bacon, a bunch of cheese, and egg. You know, it's nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing too crazy. Maybe we get some thyme in there to make those eggs taste mm-hmm. good. Yeah.
Yeah. Delicious.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I am not a good chef, unlike Jared. That is not an attribute I have. But that is one of my favorite parts of the book, is just like when you're going back to the structure question that you had asked earlier, when you have like sequential iterative views of a character that are not just one narrative, you can do things like this in that you can show their personality through the way they cook, through the way they interact with the newspaper every day or whatever. Like even just the scene, I think it's in chapter one where Jerry's like, he's on Tinder or whatever, and he's like swiping, but he's not paying attention. And there's just the little sound effects that are like swipe, 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 ooh, swipe. Ooh. And that, like, that tells you so much who that guy is and that he's not taking any of this seriously. He's kind of a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like, you know, having a conversation with someone while fishing ostensibly. And like, you don't get to do that if that's the only introduction you have to the character, but because it's, you know, 10 chapters or whatever, and you can constantly reintroduce him and show the arc of like, oh, this guy's learning and he's getting better, or he's getting worse, he's getting sadder, and this aspect of his personality is coming out. Look at how he's coping with this by cooking. Look at all the weird things he's cooking. That actually aren't that weird, but like, just they go against sort of social norms, kind of. Like,
some of them are
like
weird.
A sushi taco, I feel like that's not even that crazy. It's just like good stuff in a taco. Like, okay.
I think sushi tacos probably exist.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But there's some weird pies on that pie list for sure.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I would eat all of it. Every single last bit. I'm into
great.
It. Before we wrap up here, where should people check out where you, of course, post 4 times a day on social media? What's the best place to find you?
I'm on TikTok and Instagram, xDaveBakerX. I also have a podcast called Deep Cuts. It's a deep dive explainer podcast about obscure and strange stories. It comes out every Wednesday. And yeah, my website is heydavebaker.com, where you can get a bunch of our books.
And Nicole?
I am on Instagram as Ngu. That's my name. But it's N-G-O-U-X for anyone who doesn't know how to spell my name, which is probably everyone. And then, Blue Sky is, Nicole.gu, same spelling. And then my website, if you want to look at our work or send me a little email, is just NicoleGu.com.
Both of you, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody else should check out Pumpkin Heads when it comes out April 7th from Top Shelf. Dave, Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And they